cancel all student loan debt, Biden had initially campaigned on canceling up to $10,000 in student loan debt, and some Democratic lawmakers have called for at least $50,000 in student loan debt forgiveness. But the protesters at yesterday's rally said both offers are insufficient. Organizers with the debt collective say that if the White House restarts loan payments in May as expected, quote, nearly 8 million people will be pushed into default. Currently, about $1.6 trillion in federal student loan debt is held by over 45 million people. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 55 degrees with some light rain. In New York City, it's 52 degrees and cloudy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Amara Evering.
Stay tuned for Black Star News coming up. It is almost 1 minute past 3 p.m., and this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online.
Greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, also live streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi. Today's show, the topic is Bridging Diaspora and Africa to Build a Prosperous United Continent. We want to have a discussion following in the footsteps of Pan-Africans like Martin Delaney, like Marcus Garvey, like Dr. Du Bois, like George Padmore, like Kwame Ture, like Malcolm X, like Dr. King, and many others. Many people are not aware of Dr. King's Pan-African bent. To those who are unfamiliar, I remind them that Dr. King actually attended the independence celebration of Ghana in 1957, when he was only 28 years old. Kwame Nkrumah invited him. And when he came back, he made a great speech that is on YouTube. I highly recommend. And that speech is called Birth of a New Nation. And I think he was playing on that title of a familiar film that I don't even want to mention. So today our guest to join us in the discussion is Professor Ezra Aharon. He's a professor of global societies at Delaware State University, a great HBCU. And of course, joining me is my co-host, as always, Brother Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. Colin, yes. How you on?
Good afternoon, comrade brother.
Great.
For a minute, I thought maybe I was fired because you didn't mention me before.
funny man. All right, so Professor Ezra Aharon is professor of global societies, as I just mentioned, at Delaware State University. And he is also the founder and director of Center for Global Africa. CGA is a think tank at DSU. And CGA links the intellectual capital of HBCUs. So not just Delaware State, but all the phenomenal HBCUs that we have in this country. Links them to shared development demands of Africa and the U.S. in enterprising ways that are solution-oriented, capacity building, and mutually beneficial. And he will explain that to you listeners. Dr. Ezra Aharo, welcome to Black Star News Show. I think you're muted. Professor Ezra Aharo, please unmute yourself. Okay, so while he tries to sort out...
Okay,
here you go. Thank you. Welcome.
I'm on my phone, sorry, and I couldn't see the small...
It happens. Welcome to Black Star News Show.
Thank you. It's so great to be here.
All right, so I've introduced you. So why don't you tell listeners a little bit about the work that CGA does and what was the main inspiration to found CGA?
Okay, thank you. There's a little background noise. I'm at the African Union. There's an announcement going on. So please excuse me if you hear background noise. It's a pleasure to be here.
We'll work with it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Center for Global Africa is designed to be an intermediary institution that works with the HBCUs in general, so that the great work that we do, the intellectual capital that we have, the research that our professors do, the experts that come to our campus, to figure out ways to filter that into African development. Africa has its 50-year development blueprint called Agenda 2063, which is an important step forward in terms of how Africa is working together to transform itself, utilizing African solutions, African people, to address African issues and African problems. The African Union, at the same time, has embraced the African diaspora in a way to be able to tap into this underutilized intellectual capital that we have. And so as a consequence of that, they have designated the diaspora as Africa's sixth region. Africa has five geographical regions, northeast, south, west, and central. The sixth region represents Africans in the diaspora who are Africans, regardless of where they are from, regardless of their beliefs, as long as we embrace the idea of working together to transform Africa into a 21st century competitive, integrated, fully developed continent. And so the Center for Global Africa is designed to work with all those moving parts to bring the diaspora together in a holistic way, utilizing the institutional strength of our HBCUs as a driver. So that's the background in which the Center for Global Africa was developed.
Okay, thank you for that summary. And you've hosted a number of conferences. I remember I was actually there for the launch. I believe that was in 2018, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so tell us since then, some of the major intervention events that CGA has been able to organize, to host, or to coordinate that has already had some impact in achieving or helping to move towards some of these goals you outlined.
Okay, thank you for that. Right, in 2018, we signed an agreement, a partnership with the African Union through an agency known as APRM, or African Peer Review Mechanism. And I'd like for all the audience to pause for a moment and digest that African Peer Review Mechanism, because it's a very important agency of the African Union that evaluates governance. And our partnership with APRM is created so that we can help participate as HBCUs and institutional and industry partners participate in APRM processes. And what APRM does is it performs review reports on nations, provides recommendations. Those recommendations are to be implemented by African governments towards the principles and the fulfillment of Agenda 2063. So APRM is an important agency that deals with governance, policy and development. And this is a way in which we as the diaspora can work in these official ways with two-way channels to facilitate development. So we did that in 2018. I believe you came to our conference in 2019 that took place on the campus of Delaware State University. And we had a gathering of a lot of important political leaders in Africa, stakeholders, civil society, to come together to see ways and means that we could bring this diaspora, sixth region together with Africa, Africans. And one of the important things that we did in extension of that was to create development programs in Sierra Leone. And so Sierra Leone is one of our host nations where we work to develop models of excellence that can be replicated, scaled to work in other African nations. So Sierra Leone, we're working with a project that addresses COVID-19 interventions. We have what we established called the U.S.-Africa COVID-19 Coalition. But because there are so many interrelated issues with COVID, whether it be financial, whether it be health-related, nutrition, the impact in terms of the way COVID has devastated economies. We have a holistic approach in the way we're working with Sierra Leone to address things in a holistic way. So that's one of the ongoing projects that we're working on now. And that's something that we are working directly with the government and civil society to address.
Okay, so for somebody whose heart is in Africa,
yes,
but somebody who is not academic oriented and may not attend some of these gatherings at universities, let's say a professional or even a worker who thinks they can contribute toward building the continent, maybe somebody who wants to become involved in some business activities. I mean, as we know, multinational companies are the ones that benefit the most from Africa's resources, right? So it's somebody who just wants to be involved and is not academic. How do they become involved? What role is there for them? I imagine many people that are listening to you speak right now could be saying to themselves, well, how do I connect with this academic setting? I want to do something on the continent, but how do I get my foot in? So what would you say to a person like that?
Right, thank you. And, you know, it's interesting. It's an interesting phenomenon. If you look at the migration or the movements of Africans in America into Africa, you'll find that when Kwame Nkrumah became president of Ghana, as you said, Dr. King was there. And that was a clarion call. A lot of Africans from America went to Africa during that period of time. And the unfortunate thing is that a lot of them now are elders and many have transitioned. And we've never even told that story.
Right.
People don't even know that they're there, that they were there.
Yes, I agree with you. There's a good book waiting, but go ahead.
Well, thank you for that. And that needs to be documented. So we've not done a well enough story, a job to tell those stories. We don't want to repeat that. Neither do we want it to be where people have these desires and aspirations to go to Africa or to do things in Africa, but they don't have the means. They don't have the wherewithal. The Center for Global Africa, I always say, is the people's center. So we want to always make sure that we can connect grassroots to grassroots. And so one of the important ways in which we're doing that is this year marks the 20th anniversary of the founding of the African Union.
Right.
And so July 9th is the official date. So we're going to launch a series of events and interfaces that we're going to have beginning virtually, but certainly our annual conference that we'll have in November will be inclusive of that, so that we can begin to connect the grassroots organizations and individuals to counterparts. And, you know, how do we make these kinds of connections real? You know, today, conversations always center around equity, inclusion, and diversity. And I expand that same topic, those conversations, how does that involve Africa as well? And what role do we or can we as HBCUs play in that process? And so that's why I said, doing this 20th year anniversary, we're using this to reflect, to see how we can actually develop programs and bring grassroots organizations together and individuals. And so we're doing that, and it's important to connect with groups like yourself. Black Star News gives us a written platform to connect and to be able to bring people together. So, you know, in those various ways, Brother Milton, we're attempting to make those very ends tied together to make it happen.
Okay, listeners, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, also live streaming on WBAI.org. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi, joined by my co-host, Colin Benjamin, Managing Editor of Black Star News. Our guest today is Professor Ezra Aharon, Professor of Global Societies at Delaware State University. And we are discussing basically how to bridge the gap, bridging diaspora and Africa to build a prosperous, united continent. And listeners, you know we can't have a show like this without your support. We are 100% listener supported. We take no commercials, and that is why we can talk about any topic. And so I remind you, please do pick up the phone. Dial 212-209-2950 to support WBAI and all our programs. You can also adopt any one of our shows, including Black Star News Show, of course, by going to give, and then the number 2, WBAI.org. Back to our show, back to our guest, Colin Benjamin.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Dr. Aharon. As you were speaking about this concept of the sixth region, I was wondering in particular about the Caribbean and Latin America. Do you have any connections in that regard?
Yes, in fact, I think Milton was a part of it when we had our 2019 conference. You know, we reached out to diaspora organizations, not just in the Caribbean, but also in Canada. You know, It's an interesting connection because Sierra Leone, in its origin, as we know it as a modern nation state, evolved with Africans from America who fought in the Civil War, who eventually went to in the Revolutionary War, who eventually went to Canada and then to Sierra Leone. So yes, our center is designed to work with the diaspora in general, and the Caribbean islands. The people in those areas are very important and central to the work because they constitute just as much of the sixth region as we do in America. And certainly, if you look at Brazil, they have the largest population of African outside of Africa. You know, but the idea of us connecting to each other, that's something that not enough of that has happened. So we certainly want to do more of that. And of course, that requires resources and staffing and creating a division within the center to have those kinds of tentacles. So we're an upstart think tank. And so certainly those are things that are important to us, that we realize that those kind of connections are very vital to making the sixth region viable.
Right. And part of the reason that I asked that too is that last year we saw the inaugural CARICOM Africa Union Summit. Mm-hmm. And, as I watched it, you know, it's a lot of the same ideas and a lot of that same unity building. You know, I was also going to ask our other guest who wasn't able to make it about that, since I know he's a little bit more connected to the AU than you. But let me also ask you about the HBCUs. Could you tell us a little bit more about the other HBCUs?
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And to answer that question, that's a work in progress as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, we have to learn how to work more closely together and collaboratively together, because can an individual HBCU operate and do programs in Africa? Sure. Is that happening? Yes, it is. But as African Americans, if we're going to show up on Africa's balance sheets and we're going to have impact in real measurable ways, there's a need to have collaborative institutional kinds of cooperation that can generate industry partners, other institutional partners that will make that possible. Mm-hmm. You know, and that has to happen on all levels. You know, they just had the HBCU All-Star Game, basketball All-Star Game. I don't know. Yeah.
Yes.
And then I was astonished to know the small number of HBCU basketball players that actually have gone pro to the NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know, shout out to Hampton, that's my alma mater, Rick Mahorn, Bad Boy, Pistons. We graduated together. So I can claim that pedigree. But I was astonished to just see that it was a handful. Now, here's the point that I'm getting at. The NBA is basically talented by black athletes.
Right.
Those athletes go to other universities. And HBCUs, we struggle economically.
Right.
So how is it when you talk about this, you know, systemic racism, institutional racism, how is it that that happened?
Right.
What a grave injustice that we know that there's racism that exists in the country. HBCUs are established for that basic purpose, so we could have been educated, but yet other institutions siphon our talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a grave injustice that you know, so billions of dollars made through this network, this industry of basketball. So I say that to raise another question. What else have we missed out on?
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's not quite as visible. And I would say one of the things that we've missed out on is African development and connecting intellectual capital to African development in measurable ways that have impact.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing I wanted to also have you talk about a little is how people should never underestimate the importance of intellectual capital to the developments in Africa. I think, as we know, Marcus Garvey and George Padmore played a tremendous, tremendous role in Kwame Nkrumah's vision for Ghana and for Africa, not just spiritually or intellectually. George Padmore actually went to Ghana and was working in Ghana when he was struck by that illness, and we'll leave it like that for now. And now we're coming on, this year is the 50th anniversary of the publication of Walter Rodney's classic, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, which of course remains foundational in informing many Africans of successive generations how to understand the location of Africa in the global economy and why the continent is still exploited. And of course, with a better understanding, that is how you can start challenging that location in the global system. So I wanted you to briefly talk about, maybe just mention Rodney's book, but then on a broader sense, talk about the importance of the intellectual capital that you engaged in engaging with Africa.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you look at a well-developed, fully developed nation, I would argue that you're looking at a mindset that has produced those products and symbols.
Correct.
If you see an underdeveloped nation, you're still looking at a mindset. If you know, because a thought produces an outcome, and intellectual human capital is something that when you invest in it, it's going to produce something. If you don't invest, then you're not going to get those benefits. You know, one of the things about the European design for development is that I would argue they've always viewed development as a form of power. So that if a bridge needed to be built, it's going to be built. If roads need to be, they're going to build roads. If internet need to be in every city and all libraries, because why? That is going to continually generate development, and development is a form of power. So intellectual capital is the gold, the oil, the platinum of the future. By investing in intellectual capital, which is inexhaustible, a nation will continually benefit because natural resources are exhausted. At some point in time, you know, the end of this yellow brick road of oil is going to eventually happen at some point in time. Right. You know, so this new world of technology and digitization, and you know, that's the future. And we as Africans, we in the sixth region in Africa, you know, have to come to that realization. And so that's why it's important to understand that there's an intellectual heritage about ourselves that we have to extend the authenticity of it so that we can continue to be relevant in the future. Because by relying on other development models, we can see that now it's a glaring fact that these injustices, these inequalities, you know, they're built into the design of what capitalism has produced in the 21st century.
I know you have to run back to this meeting. Colin, do you have a final question before we let
Professor, could you talk about some specific areas of opportunities and development that you're targeting, right now, like what's first?
Well, we're dealing with public health and we're dealing with agriculture. You know, we have over 100 historically black colleges and universities, 19 of them are land-grant institutions, and agriculture is a central part of that. It's interesting because Africans were brought to the Americas enslaved because of cash crops.
That's right.
But yet, what cash crop do we now control? You know, once again. So, you know, agriculture is now the backbone of the world. It always has been. And so now, as we're looking at how we can become more and more involved in African development, you know, agriculture is one of the key components to that. Our land-grant institutions perform premier research for the U.S. Agriculture Department. You know, and that research easily has application that can be translated into Africa, but it has to be organized. So the Center for Global Africa works in that capacity. So what we did, and really this conversation that I'm having now, was to include Dr. Eddie Maloka, who is the CEO of African Peer Review Mechanism. And he's also, he also doubles as our inaugural Dr. Martin Delaney Distinguished Fellow, which is a fellowship we just developed to be able to take the great work of Dr. Maloka as he's working in these multiple capacities, to be able to use that as a template so we can tie institutions into what we're doing, so that we can identify priority areas like you, like you're saying, in real time, which is why I'm at the UN right now, at this committee of experts on public administration. You know, so these are all important tentacles that we have to connect. So on next Monday, excuse me, next Tuesday, I believe it's the 12th, we're having a public event at the Wilmington Library in Wilmington, Delaware, where Dr. Maloka will be, and we'll launch this fellowship and have this reception where we'll announce a lot of these important initiatives that we're doing, that hopefully we'll get a chance to come back on the show and report on.
Absolutely. Professor Ezra Aharod, we don't want you to be late for your meeting. We thank you for taking out the time. Please provide people with the website of your foundation, your think tank, and also how people can get in touch with you. And also, in case there's somebody with a very deep pocket who's been listening and wants to become involved.
Yes. Center for Global Africa, right? You can just go to centerforglobalafrica.com. You can reach us at info@centerforglobalafrica.com. Right? Or you could go to the Delaware State University website, search Center for Global Africa. You'll find it. If you know, if you Google Center for Global Africa or Google me, Ezra Aharon, that's Ezra, E-Z-R-A-H with a Z, with a Z and a H at the end, you'll get it. And certainly we'll appreciate donations as well as support in the form of people who are interested in getting involved and working on projects. We appreciate all that type of support.
Thank you so much. We'll make sure we have you back again.
Thank you so much.
Engineer Reggie, the floor is yours. Let's hear some African music. Yes, yes. Welcome back. Welcome back, listeners, to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York, live streaming also on WBAI.org. I'm your host, Milton Alimadi, joined by my co-host, Colin Benjamin, managing editor, Black Star News. So welcome to the second half hour. You heard our conversation with Professor Ezra Aharon at Delaware State University on bridging diaspora and Africa. in order to build a prosperous, united continent. Listeners, you can only hear this type of conversation, as you know, on a station like WBAI. So it is important to support us. We don't take anything for granted. We appreciate the support you give. When we see the number of buddies increasing, it really gives us tremendous confidence as well. So to become a buddy, please go to give and then the number 2, WBI.org. You can adopt any one of our shows, Black Star News show included, of course, as a buddy, in which case the money is taken out of your credit or debit card on a monthly basis. And you can also make a regular contribution by dialing 212-209-2950. And for the remaining time that we have today, any listener wants to become involved in today's conversation, ask any questions, please dial 212-209-2877. Colin Benjamin.
Comrade brother.
Yes, I like Pan-African brothers like that. Can you imagine if every HBCU had a professor like Ezra Aharon?
Right.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
And I'm glad that he's reaching out to all of these other HBCUs, you know, because imagine if we can harness just even 10 of them, not all of them.
Right. Right.
10 or 20 of them involved in this Pan-African project. You know, and he's right. We need to revive that spirit following the independence of Ghana. When, you know, in fact, people that are not familiar with that speech that I mentioned earlier by Dr. King, I strongly recommend that speech, Birth of a New Nation. Go to YouTube. I think it's about 50 minutes long. And you can tell that going to Africa and attending Ghana's independence celebration had a tremendous impact on him. And he makes it clear. It really reinvigorated him because, first of all, Nkrumah also shared that belief in nonviolence, right? Mm-hmm. Nonviolent positive reaction, as he called it. It doesn't mean, you know, you don't take action. I mean, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that is how he was able to get Ghana's independence, when Ghana's independence becomes the first prime minister. So if you listen to that speech, you can tell how King was articulating, giving examples of how Nkrumah engaged the British, and you can tell that also that influenced him during the civil rights struggle. And Dr. King, in that speech, also called for diaspora professionals in this country, you know, doctors, engineers, lawyers, to go, and business folks, of course, as well, to move to Ghana and help this new nation. And right. They responded positively. So now here we are in the 21st century, and Professor Aharon is basically talking about the same thing. We need to engage intellectually, we need to embrace the new technologies, and we need to ensure that we are not left behind, whether in diaspora or on the African continent.
You know, to one of the key points that he made there too, that we should repeat, is the fact that how a lot of our people were not even aware, like he talked about, you know, that there were a lot of other people who heeded Dr. King's call, right. But how, you know, we're not aware of this
that history. Generation, right?
Yeah.
In fact, people like Maya Angelou lived there for many years, and there was a large a community of transplanted diaspora Africans.
Yeah, because I think it was Stevie Wonder. You had the Neville brothers, I think. You know, yeah, but, well, this is after, but, you know. But that point of our people not knowing about these things and we not, you know, transplanting the info of these important moments in history,
right?
It's something that we need to really take more serious.
Absolutely. Colin, it's only we are the ones that must tell that story, because nobody else is going to do it for us, because that's not a story that you know the corporate media would like to disseminate widely. You know, obviously, I mean, it's in their interest to maintain that wedge between right. diaspora and the continent. And as I mentioned during the discussion with Professor Aharon, the primary beneficiaries of that wedge, that separation, are the multinational corporations, who are the ones who are most engaged in disseminating that demonic image of Africa, right. while at the same time exploiting the resources from the continent.
Right.
So there are other topics, I guess, domestically that we can also turn our thoughts toward.
I know we will probably.
What have you been following?
Well, for one thing, we have the Senate confirmation hearings. We now have three Republicans on board. We have Utah Senator Mitt Romney, along with Susan Collins, as well as Lisa Murkowski. So basically, we know that, you know, she will be definitely confirmed, and they could call it. They could somewhat call it bipartisan, I guess. Okay. But so you know,
that's to get out of the committee, right? Or you're talking about the overall now?
Well, overall, I'm talking about
okay.
there was
okay,
one,
very good.
Devin Spitz.
Yeah. So any reflections on the confirmation hearing itself? Did anything? You wrote some editorial commentaries. What did you find most? Grievous or aggravating, as you are.
I mean, well, it's the hypocrisy again. It's the kind of like grandstanding, you know, nonsense that, you know, we saw from Cruz, you know, where he's attacking, he's attacking these so-called CR, you know, critical race theory writers like Ibrahim Kim.
I'm
making it seem as if, like, Judge, as if Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson have something to do with their writings. There was this ridiculous thing about.
Yeah, but you know what he's doing, right? You know what he's doing.
Of course,
by accident. He's lining himself up as a potential future candidate. So, you know, why not, you know, play the race card as he always does, you know? I mean, he reminds me of the very uncharitable things that his buddy Trump said about him. You know, how quickly we forget those things, man.
Right.
This is the same a coward who ran on vacation, right? When his state was under duress. It's just amazing.
Blamed his daughters for, pretty much blamed his daughters by saying, well, you know, they wanted to go on vacation. But, you know, it was so many of them because you had, Lindsey Graham was like just an absolute, you know, I think Lindsey Graham should have probably been an actor too, because starting from.
He is an actor. He's just on a different stage. That's
right. I mean, I guess I should say like an Academy Award with it. With the Kavanaugh thing, his performance there when, you know, he was, you know, fanning all this outrage and some of the nonsense that he did this time around, and the fact that you voted for this judge just last year too, you know, he voted for her to circuit. So, you know, and it wasn't the first time he voted for her at least twice, and so here he is this time, you know, talking about all these these problems that he have with her judicial, and then this whole thing about the making her seem soft on child pornography thing.
Right, right. Oh, man. They went on and on about that, right?
Really disgusting.
They went on and on. You know, they were almost saying like she has those kind of, you know, on her own computer. I mean, it's so outrageous,
disgusting.
There was one time that, you know, she was pretty calm and cool and collected, but the one time I think she almost went off, and I would not have blamed her. You know,
but the other thing too of it is that while they were there smacking her with this, you know, child pornography stuff, these are the same people that didn't want an investigation when Kavanaugh was being, you know, accused.
Absolutely.
Of
right.
Several women.
Right.
Sexual, you know, and so it's so crazy.
Yeah, they call that teenage indiscretion or something, right?
Yeah. So,
What else is on your plate?
We have the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and all this controversy around these text messages,
right,
that she was sending to
What is the possibility that she never consulted the honorable judge himself even one time?
Come on,
what is the possibility of that?
I mean, come on, man. Like, I mean, you know. Right,
I don't want to say stuff that, you know, maybe.
Right. Don't, you know.
I should not go way out of line on radio. Because obviously you don't want to speculate so much. But I think it's a reasonable question that I just pose. What is the possibility that they never discussed it even once? I think that's highly unlikely. I think I'll leave it like that. I don't want to accuse without any evidence beyond that. But any reasonable person would say that if they are on speaking terms.
Right.
It's highly unlikely that.
And the fact that certain things that having to do with January 6th, things that he were the only justice to vote against, you know what I mean? And now there are a lot of people who are now rightly talking about looking at, you know, the code of conduct for Supreme Court judges.
Yeah, that's a tough one with a highly politicized court like that. It's, you know, it's really tough. And of course, you know, they've needed a code of conduct for a very, very long time, right? Given many of the egregious, you know, historical rulings that we shouldn't even bother going through right now. Listeners, well, once again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBI 99.5 FM New York Radio, also live streaming on WBI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi, joined by my co-host, Colin Benjamin, managing editor of Black Star News. And once again, I just want to remind you that we take nothing for granted. We are able to bring you these types of conversations because of your support. So please be kind, be nice to us, pick up the phone and dial 212-209-2950. Any contribution will be put to good use. You can also adopt any one of our WBI phenomenal shows as a buddy, including Black Star News Show, of course, in which case the money is taken every month from your credit or debit card, the money that you designate, the amount you designate. You can do that by going to give, and then the number 2, and then WBI.org. I think we have a few callers. Let's take the first caller. Caller, tell us your name, where you're calling from, and your question.
Yes, hello?
Go ahead, caller. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, brother Milton, my name is Demari. I'm calling from Brooklyn. And it's in regard to the professor who was just on your show.
Yes.
So a little bit concerned with this association with the African Union, because we have an organization that is called Design United States of Africa Movement. We are actually planning to launch a declaration of a United States of Africa in Conakry, Guinea, 2023. That's Marcus Garvey's birthday. Now, if you know, the African Union is talking about 2063. Brother Milton, if your house is on fire right now, why would you want to wait 45 years to implement Osagyefo, Kwame Nkrumah, and Marcus Garvey's program? So we have some serious issues with the African Union. This is the same organization that is 70% funded by Europeans. even to build their headquarters in Addis Ababa, they have to let the Chinese come set up a bulk building when Dangote, the Nigerian billionaire, who could have donated that. So we don't want to make the same mistake. Osagie Funkwame Nkrumah in 1960, they had a Guinea-Ghana-Mali union.
Yes, I recall.
Right. Now, the Osagie, was because of his good intention, he decided to expand it to join the OAU, the Organization of African Unity. Later on, we found out that that organization just had distractors and people who had no intention of a United States of Africa. So the professor needs to check his association with the African Union.
Right. Okay, so well, let me ask you, though. Let me ask you, Carla. So here is a professor who can use his position at the university to get the university involved in doing something on the continent and can get the other HBCUs involved as well. I'm sure he would like to partner with a much more effective organization. And I agree with you. I've been very critical on the African Union myself, that it's completely underperformed. And it's not surprising. As you said, if somebody cuts the check for your budget, it means they call the tunes as well. So if the check is cut by Europe, Europe is going to call the tunes. But if you're in a position like Professor Ezra Aharon and you want to do something, is it not better to at least do something instead of doing nothing at all? Is that not another way of seeing it?
Well, I mean, I commend the professor's works, and his intentions are good. But it's just that his association with the African Union, and it's the same thing with Muammar Gaddafi. When he had the meeting in Ghana in 2009, we met with the Libyan ambassador. We said, man, listen, Brother Gaddafi has good intentions, but he is trying to convince corrupt African presidents who mortgage their soul. They were just pimping Gaddafi, taking more money from him.
Right.
They were not serious with no United States.
Yeah. They not only did they take his money, and then when NATO was bombing Libya, none of them came to assist. I'll call her. Two things. I think you should get in touch with Professor Aharon at Delaware State University. But also, I think you should repeat, if you have a website, say your website so people can also get in touch with you, people that are Pan-Africans. And then I will take the second call. Go ahead. Say your website.
Right now, we're still updating it because we are launching this United States of Africa declaration in Guinea, Conakry. We are working with the three African states, Guinea, with the...
So how do people get in touch with you if people want to continue this conversation with you?
Well,
do you have a Facebook page? Do you have any contact information?
Yeah, well, they could just go to our email. It's called holisticonegreentechexpo@gmail.com.
Okay, so listen, Carla, I have to take the second call. Thank you for your time. Caller number two, what is your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Hello. Your name and where are you calling from, and then your question.
My name is Mitch. I'm calling from Brooklyn. I would like to know, was there any compensation to the massacre in Darfur from the African Union? Was there any type of funds set aside to rebuild this area and make these people whole? I know they're having a trial now, but what about the people in the area that was devastated by this atrocity? Was it anything done with that? Thank you.
Okay, that's a very good question. And not as far as I know, I don't think there's been any compensation yet. I think that is a very legitimate question. I think that's something that I will definitely look to address in a future episode of this program. So thank you very much for that question. As you know, they've been struggling to really democratize since they got rid of the dictator, General Omar Hassan Bashir. But the military, some of elements of the military are trying to push back, the reactionary elements, I think they need to take care of that first. And once they succeed in getting those reactionary generals out of the way, then issues such as compensation for the victims, I think, will then be put on the table. Brother Colin Benjamin, any final observations before we need to sign off?
Well, I would just, again, you know, yesterday was the 54th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. And, you know, I, over the weekend, as I was thinking about this win by the Amazon workers in Staten Island, I couldn't help but reflect on the fact that Dr. King was killed trying to help, you know, sanitation workers.
In Memphis, right.
Memphis, you know, so.
Yeah, how fitting, and I'm glad you made that connection. Unfortunately, listeners, that's all the time we have. Remain Pan-African. Remember to go to blackstarnews.com. You can follow me at Ali Mahdi. Colin, your email very quickly as we sign off.
Colin1L_B30@Yahoo.
That's all the time we have.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. Today, former President Barack Obama returned to the White House for the first time since he left office in 2017 to celebrate the 12th anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. Obama, alongside President Biden, announced steps the White House will take to make health care more affordable, including closing a loophole that prevents millions of Americans from qualifying for assistance. According to a fact sheet released today by the White House, eliminating this loophole would, quote, see 200,000 uninsured people gain coverage, and nearly 1 million Americans would see their coverage become more affordable. This change to the Affordable Care Act legislation could go into effect by next year. In a matter of days, Ketanji Brown Jackson could become the nation's first Black woman Supreme Court justice. A bipartisan group of senators voted yesterday to advance her nomination to the full Senate floor after the Senate Judiciary Committee deadlocked on recommending her confirmation earlier in the day. Also on Monday, Republican Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mitt Romney said they will join Senator Susan Collins in favor of confirming Judge Jackson, all but assuring that Judge Jackson could be confirmed with bipartisan backing. That vote could come as early as Thursday or Friday. In announcing his support for Jackson, Senator Romney stated, quote, "While I don't expect to agree with every decision she may make on the court, I believe that she more than meets the standard of excellence and integrity." The states Missouri, Arizona, and Louisiana sued the Biden administration yesterday over its plans to rescind Title 42. The three Republican-led states argue that lifting the Trump-era order on immigration would, quote, create an unprecedented surge at the border that will overwhelm immigration officials. In the name of fighting the spread of COVID-19, Title 42 allows the U.S. to rapidly expel migrants without any due process or a review of their asylum claims. Last week, the CDC announced it is officially ending Title 42 as of May 23rd, after finding there is no longer a public health justification to keep it in place. The order has been used to expel migrants about 1.7 million times over the past 2 years. The organization, Human Rights First, found that these expulsions resulted in nearly 10,000 instances of kidnapping, torture, and rape, as well as other violent attacks on migrants. More than 90 refugees died in the Mediterranean Sea over the weekend after a tightly packed boat capsized off the North African country Libya, according to Doctors Without Borders. The migrants drowned on Saturday as they were trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea in a desperate attempt to reach Europe. Only four people survived the incident. Doctors Without Borders are calling for the four survivors to not be returned to Libya, where refugees face continual abuse, torture, and slavery in Libya's militia-run detention centers.